Welcome to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hanson, hosted by attorneys Sean Garner and Adam Hanson.
I went to Spain for a couple of years as a missionary for my church. And when you don't know where you're going. So we believe that we have a prophet that leads and guides the church, and that the leaders of the church pray about it, and they say, Sean's going to Brazil, Adam's going to Spain. And so you open this up in front of family, right? And so you're learning where you're going when you open up the letter and you're reading it. You've been assigned to blah, blah, blah. And when I read that, I didn't even know where I was going, to be honest. It said Las Palmas, Spain, and it's the Canary Islands. And I was like 19. I had no idea where that was.
Okay.
But I did see Spain and I thought, man, Catholics? Are you kidding me? Like, how am I going to go door to door where the Catholics are? And it ended up being the greatest experience of my life. It was so
awesome.
Fun.
That's great.
It was amazing. And I found that we had so much more in common than we did not in common.
Right.
There's other religions I'm not very excited about, but
that's the whole point, right?
Catholicism, it's like, I feel like they're my cousins now.
Yeah, that's the whole point.
It was so fun.
Glad to hear that.
I do. Yes. I feel like I have an easier time conversing with Catholics than staunch non-denominational Christians, because for some reason, I think that it's taught in a lot of churches, anti-Mormon doctrine that says we don't believe in Christ. And that to me is super offensive, and it's a hard thing to continue on in just a nonchalant conversation when the thing that is most important in my life is being considered something that I don't believe in and that I'm not a Christian. And I think Catholics share that same type of outsiders treatment from Christians. They say, well, you're not Christian if you're Catholic. Well, of course you are. Christ is your Savior. It's your Redeemer. And it's interesting and a bit hypocritical that the Christ, who invited all to come into him, has a group of followers that seem to be trying to distinguish and exclusionary, right? And in fact, there's a church right across the street from us that also does a private school, and it's a fantastic education, and it couldn't be a better location because it's right across from my office and it's right across the street from my house. But in order for me to have my children go there, I actually have to renounce my religion, because they don't believe that I believe in Christ. And so if I'm part of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, then I won't fit in with their curriculum, even though I can be agnostic or any other religion and participate, but I'd have to renounce quote-unquote Mormonism. Mormon, you know, is just a nickname for the church. And it's not a nickname that we take offense to. It's a prophet that we believe in that is a unique scripture that other denominations don't actually adhere to. And so Mormon is a fantastic individual that I'd like to pattern my life after, but he's not who I worship. And that's where today leaders of church encourage us to use the true name of the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints, as opposed to Mormons, not because Mormonism is offensive, but because we are leaving out the primary core of our belief, Jesus Christ.
We're creating, division where you should not be.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Kind of like saying happy holidays instead of Merry Christmas.
Right. Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with happy holidays, but the reason we're celebrating is because the birth of our Redeemer.
Yep. Right.
So awesome. Did you growing up, you were going to mass and things like that, catechism? And,
yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You did all the things.
Yeah, correct.
So you just, I asked that question
to your point, I go to church a little bit more than three times per year. I know. Yeah. We're really active. My kids are really active. And I'm just beyond that, the man of, there's a group called St. Vincentians, and it's an arm of the Catholic, I guess, church.
How do you pronounce that?
The Vincentians, it comes from St. Vincent de Paul. St. Vincent de Paul, it was
Vincenzo. Yeah, from Roma.
Anyway, one guy from Paris started working and helping the poor. And he just named the group you know, St. Vincent de Paul because of that saint.
Mm.
And now if you're part of that group, you're a Vincentian.
Better yeah.
It just created...
Monjes. Are they monks? Okay. Is it a group of monks or no?
No, it's just citizens, just normal...
group of believers.
That help the underserved, pretty much.
I see.
So every Thursday, we will build food boxes, and I will interview the couple or whoever, and my wife will be in the back. Anyway, so we have cool pictures of my kid being like, he was in this car seat in one of those food kind of shelves, and it was like ragu and spaghetti on him, and there's a picture, like, well, that's the youngest Vincentian, you know, when he was like, well, month one.
Yes.
I see.
So
it's giving to the needy.
Yes, and Arizona is the biggest in the world.
Really?
Awesome. Yeah, and we... It's just, you know, people from other, you know, states come and see, like, what are you guys, you know, what are you doing? You know, it's awesome, you know.
Have you been to St. Peter's Basilica?
No.
No. It's pretty
cool. Have you
been
to Europe?
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yes.
But not to the Vatican yet?
No.
So.
My wife has, not me.
In the Basilica, so you've got like the throne of God at the very front. It's all ornate, beautiful. And the further you get away on the ground in the marble is the Vatican recognized like capillas, like the churches, right?
Mm-hmm.
And so one of them is in Arizona there. As you get further and further away, there's
That's
Arizona.
Cool.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome. It's over in Tucson. It's San Javier, I think.
Okay, yeah. The mission, yeah. San Javier, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so anyway, so yeah, really active. The family is really active and all that. So the kids are giving up the screen time, to your point. And, you know,
for Lent.
Yes, for Lent. And I'm adding things.
Does Lent end on next Sunday?
No, we're in day 20, I think it's 25 today.
40 days. Yeah.
40 days.
Yeah.
So
40 days. Does halfway. It end the week after Easter?
No, it ends on the Saturday before, correct?
Yes.
Well, isn't Easter on the 6th
no.
this year? Oh, it
isn't. Way late in the April. It's like,
oh, that's interesting.
3 weeks in April. It's weird.
Yeah, Easter is one of those holidays that is so unique in how they determine what day it falls on each year.
Yeah.
It's like the first Sunday after the spring solstice and maybe something else thrown in there.
Groundhog.
Yeah. Right?
Groundhog has to play in that, I think. I don't know.
Yeah.
He determines our Easter.
No, yes, no. And spring.
Estate
planning.
Oh, that's what it is. It's the first... yeah, it's the first Sunday of the month after the spring solstice occurs.
Okay. I'll take your word on it.
Yeah, me too. I just,
chat GPT it.
I said, just tell me
when it is.
And then
when the eggs ready,
I'll be there.
Get the bunnies out.
I'll be there. Yeah.
We're trying to, as a family, we're trying to put more emphasis on this year on Jesus Christ and his resurrection mm-hmm. for Easter, as opposed to the Easter bunny and all that kind of stuff. You know, yeah. It's like, well, I mean, I understand the lineage of it, kind of how it developed a lot like Christmas, you know, you got your Christmas, mm-hmm. you got these symbols that over time traditionally have meant certain things or were pegged to certain, whether it's pagan stuff or whatever. And so we have it now as tradition. I understand that, but I think we're trying as a family just to get back to, you know,
origin.
Why are we even doing
the
this?
Meaning, yeah. The meaning of things. That's
which is
cool.
The true, is the most important thing, which is the resurrection.
Yeah.
Right. Of Jesus Christ. And so as part of that, a couple of weeks ago, as a family, we did some research on Lent and on Good Friday and all those kind of things. And I was really surprised to see how much, again, going back to like we're cousins, how close our religions actually are, right? For us, we do Lent every month, if you will. We do a fast every month. This Sunday is our what we call Fast Sunday. So every month we fast from at least two meals. And then the money that you save from fasting... fasting, but buying those two meals, you pay to as a fast offering to the church, and the church distributes that money. Well, it uses it to buy goods, or like you're doing in your fellowship. We help individuals all over the world, whether you're members or not. Like if it's an emergency down in Baton Rouge, we're there, right? We've got all the storehouse ready. We've got food. We've got provisions. We're ready for emergencies all around the world. And that's paid for by us fasting every Sunday.
That's cool.
So it's our version of Lent, if you will.
Yeah. Right.
And then when it came to, oh man, what was it? So you do the Ash, right?
Wednesday, yes.
Yeah. That begins Lent for you. There was something else. And when we studied it, oh, I can't remember off the top of my head, but you'll tell me. It was the equivalent of our, what we call sacrament, when we take
communion.
No, it wasn't communion. It's during Lent. It was something else. I can't remember what else is done, but I just thought it was really, really cool how connected we actually are.
Yeah. Yes. It's care. Yeah. The whole idea is, of course, just to care and always being, you know, open to dialogue and sharing and, mm-hmm. and the common good. I guess that's why we like each other. Right? That's why I'm still here, I guess, you know, and
you think
just
that?
For that, for everybody in the podcast, they did not interview me before, you know, knowing, meaning they didn't say, what is your religion? Then yes, you're going to be working with me. That's not the way it went.
Do you
know, we just like,
are you nervous about broadcasting your religion? Do you try and keep it close to your vest, or are you more like, you know,
no,
this is who I am?
No. Why are you asking that question?
I'm just curious.
Just because a lot of people, it's politics and religion that are taboo. You know, they like those two things outside of public discussion. Whereas that's exactly what we talk about in these seminars, not seminars, but radio podcasts. And I think that it's refreshing to a lot of people because it feels like more and more things that we hold near and dear to our heart has been something that if we express, then it's either going to be ridiculed or it's going to offend somebody. And so we feel less open to express those feelings. And I think that's negative. I think it's very healthy to express those feelings and at the same time be open and have a mutual respect for other people's beliefs.
Right.
And that is a fine line to walk, you know, to be adamant about your beliefs, but also extremely respectful to other people's beliefs at the same time.
Yeah, to your point, on Wednesday, I was having dinner with some, I would say, people that I just met.
Yeah.
And they say, hey, I want you to meet each other, so let's just have a dinner, right? So the food arrived, and I just, you know, gave thanks for myself. It's not like, don't eat, I'm going to... I just didn't
make a scene or anything.
No, I just did it for myself, and then I made the sign of the cross.
Great.
I didn't.
All those doing it now.
No, I did not ask for permission or what do you think? Should I do it or not? Right. And if somebody, I don't argue with anybody. Right. If somebody will challenge me, won't even feel offended. You know, it's just, I don't want to have a discussion with that person anyway. You know, if you're that
like
you're offended because I have a, if you're offended because I'm, yeah. So don't, the answer, because the short answer is no, I don't mind.
And it's really refreshing to hear that, because so much today in society, we are asked to not give offense to anybody in the things that we say. And so when we have deeply rooted beliefs that may offend somebody, we're asked to keep them to ourselves. And it's actually just, it's a fallacy. I can't offend you. You can choose to take offense or not. If I can't offend you, that means I have control over your reaction and how you feel about something. And that is a very vulnerable place for you to be in, to give me that type of power over you. And at the same time, I need to understand that about other people. If people disrespect my point of view and my religion, then I have two choices. One, to continue discussing it with them, or to leave that discussion, like you said. But either way, I don't have to take offense. I'm a fool to take offense. To take offense is like to take something that is repulsive, grab it, put it in my pocket, and carry it around with me. Right. Why would I do that?
Yeah.
I was going to ask you, so I know we talked about this last time you were on the show, that politics is not your thing. You try to keep out of it, right? So I don't know if this is politics. I don't know if you consider this politics or not, but going back to the last Summer Olympics in Paris, they opened that Olympics with, did you hear about this news story where they mocked?
Yeah, the Last Supper.
The Last Supper scene?
No.
So
it's disturbing.
Well, they had I don't even know. I didn't.
They had a lot of people that were obviously gay and transgender, that were naked for the most part. Many of them were overweight. They were very overly dressed in makeup and gaudy type of outfits. And it was set up very much in the way the portrait of the Last Supper was depicted. Mm-hmm. And it was
part of the opening ceremony.
Part of the opening ceremony. And there was no question that the attempt was to strike at the heart of Christianity and invoke some type of deep-seated feelings. Mm-hmm. And art is one of those things that is, yes, you're trying to evoke emotion. That is what artists try to do. But normally, good artists do it in a way that invokes positive emotion. And what has been happening lately in society is they'll go to the most disgusting, most depraved ways of exhibiting sexual or human behavior to try to elicit emotion from that and saying, well, it's art. And I can step behind free speech and art, and that is my defense for doing it. And the fact that I got an emotional arousal out of you shows that I am truly an artist. No, you're just a despicable human being that is using something that is sacred to me and dragging it through the mud to get a reaction. And that means you're not an artist or a genuine good person.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this.
Hey, Yuma, Dave Ramsey here. If you listen to our show or know anything about us, then you know I only recommend products and services I trust and I believe in. That's why when it comes to protecting your assets and planning for your loved one's future, you've got to call my friends Sean Garner and Adam Hansen at the law firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen. I encourage you to take the first step and attend a free, no-pressure seminar and learn all of your options. The firm of Deason, Garner, and Hansen has been educating the Yuma community for over 40 years, and this is the only area of law that they practice. Sean and Adam believe in giving free education to help people make smart decisions about their assets and help them leave a legacy for their family that they can be proud of. Schedule a free personal consultation today. Call 783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.
You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hansen, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
I have two comments on that. One is, sadly, that's natural. Why am I saying that is because think about, and thank you for sharing that book with me, that one that you, Zosa.
I just totally
love it. It was, I could not stop listening.
So for our audience, do you remember the title of it?
What's so great about Christianity?
Yes.
Yeah. Dinesh D'Souza is the author.
An amazing ability to go through actual facts and put them together with what's going on in society and make a rational explanation as to where we are, where we've come from, and how it all was put together. And he explains, and I don't want to cut you off there, but how Christianity and religion in general is not in conflict with science. In fact, it is complementary with science.
Yes. So why am I saying that? Well, because in one of that comment, if you put it in today's terms, it's you're attacking the person that is the most influencer. Let's call it the same, just like using the words that today everybody's using, right? So when you have fame, let's just use common
terminology
that everybody will relate. Somebody is famous, it's influencer, it's influencing on a lot of people. When somebody wants some recognition, which is good or bad, like, okay, let me attack that because regardless, I'm going to get some light on me.
Yes.
Right? So just using this pure marketing stunts, right? So, okay, I'm going to say something about and then just plug the name, you know? And then we can plug presidents or businessmen or successful and the Jesus, you know? Mm-hmm. And then if I attack and I create an emotion because I'm attacked or just a light, and if I, and now let me just the second comment. Now we put money on emotions. That's why Facebook is Facebook, you know, because they're making money on emotions.
They call it clickbait because something that that elicits an emotional response right off the bat. You click.
So you make money on that. So forget about what kind of emotion, to your point. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter. I need clicks, right? So then you will do art or a statement or whatever thing is to create an emotion. I'm not saying good or bad. Just yes. Give me an emotion and give me money for your interest.
And I think they have just as good a chance of going viral with negative comments as they do positive comments. So they're just like, whatever we can do to make this person comment on this, it's going to make this more popular, and the popularity is going to generate income for me, and money is their god, you know, their idol.
Exactly. So I don't know if you have read the book called Nexus, or anyway, I think it's Nexus, the name of the book. And he just described how the AI in this case, Facebook specifically, that was designed to, I want you to put clicks, mm-hmm. as many clicks as possible. That's your job.
And stay on this site as long as possible.
So the was learning, like, negative emotions, to your point. Negative emotions get more clicks than good emotions. Like if you petting a puppy, that's mm-hmm. cute, that's great, or all that. Yeah, maybe you get 10 clicks. But if you show something as
drowning a puppy.
Yes, something as gross like you're yeah. describing. What? But it just makes sense, because if I play that game, if I am offended, I'm like, what? And I'm just click on it, and I just comment it on hate, and it doesn't matter, you're commenting. You know, you're making a comment. Your thumbs whatever. Mm-hmm. You know, it doesn't matter. So Facebook software learned this. So that's why you get bombarded with those kind of things. You think the world is ending because everything that Facebook is showing you is negative content, because it's when you react the most, right? So it's scary, but that's reality.
So in the world of politics, I am conservative. And so I follow conservative news feeds. And I know that there is risk in doing that, because I'm putting myself in an echo chamber. Mm-hmm. I'm only exposing myself to beliefs that foster what I already currently want to believe in, and news lines that are going to cater what I'm looking for, when I need to be open to the whole big picture and see both sides of the story. One thing that has irritated me more recently, though, is now the election is over, and before the election, these news feeds, whether it was, you know, Megyn Kelly or Russell Brand or Fox or, you know, anybody else, there was a lot of negative reporting about what was going on in the world and, you know, how the Biden administration was torpedoing the American dream. And I could say, well, you know, that's because there's a lot of negative news out there. That's what the news is. But then the election has occurred. And everything that these conservative podcast hosts or news channels wanted is actually happening, and yet they're still reporting on the negative aspects of it. Look at all the Democrats complaining about what we're doing, and they're not reporting on everything that's going well and just focusing on the positive of it. They're still pointing out how negative it is, because we are doing everything great, but yet there other people are still upset about it, and they're focusing on the upset people as opposed to the benefits that are happening. Yes. So
the same goes, you know, that's why I can't watch news.
It's depressing.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's an interesting proposition. As you were talking about it, it gave me thought, or I saw some similarities between what you were saying and in our area of practice. We do estate planning, but there's another area of practice, divorce, family law. And those attorneys tend to do really well in the divorce area, because people will pay everything they have to destroy the other
right.
spouse. Yeah.
And it goes back to kind of what you're saying.
Yeah.
The negative attention tends to, like, if I were to see a comment, it might be difficult for me to withhold myself, that if I didn't agree, you know, I want to get in there. And I want to prove that I'm right. Right. And yeah, you will fight till the death to be right.
Okay, so now let's get to the next step. I always like to call to action.
You okay. know?
Like, well, next step.
What do we do?
If you don't like that, you feel that, mm-hmm. why are you turning the TV on? So if I don't like that emotion for that, I don't have Facebook. So my reaction to your comment about the Olympics,
yeah.
it I was not aware of this. I'm sure it happened. I mean, I'm not saying you're lying, but it is irrelevant in my life.
Yeah.
You see? And if I'm just angry, you know, with what happened, I will be less, well, I need to do a job. And I think I have a gift and I need to, you know, share it. And if I'm just sabotaging myself with that information, I'm not helping anybody, not myself, not my family, not my clients, right? So
yeah.
What I did, I just start cutting those things because I can't show up in my office feeling angry happy because something like
that. Yeah, you can't be productive and happy and reach your full potential if you're harboring those negative feelings. But let me play devil's advocate, speaking of negative. So number one, I don't want to bury my head in the sand to what's going on around me. And so that's one rationale that I use for keeping up with what's, you know, the news and listening to that. The other is, and I've been feeling this pressure quite a bit lately, is there needs to be something, an alternative voice out there that people like us that want to seek the positive and understand what's going on in the world without feeling negative can listen to and understand and at the end of the podcast feel good about it. So we want to put out there information that is both beneficial, accurate, provides a glimpse of what's going on in society, and leave you with a good feeling.
Right.
And yep. So I think that we have taken a lot of time and resources to put together this podcast, not because we make any money, and certainly going contrary to what the formula is for success in, you know, pursuing those negative feelings, but to do it in a way to give somebody an alternative, to give somebody the option that wants to seek information in a positive way.
So before I went to do my undergrad, I had options. I wanted to go check different schools out. And one of those was BYU. Are you familiar with BYU?
Yes.
Brigham Young University? Mm-hmm. Our church finances that university, right? They have a moral code. They have, it's a private, is it private? No, it's a public school.
It's private. It's private in the extent that it doesn't receive public funds.
Public funds, okay. But anyway, having said all that, I went up there to visit it. I visited some friends before I was, you know, I needed to transfer to a university from junior college after I got my associate's degree. And so I went up to BYU to get the feel of it, you know, and I was up there and I just wasn't feeling it. I'm like, this just isn't for me. You know, even though I'm surrounded by all these people that are a lot like me, have a lot of the same ideals, I just wasn't feeling it. But instead, you know, well, I prayed about this before I did all this anyway. But the thought that came to mind was, well, Arizona State. And I'm like, Arizona State, that's what popped in my head. I'm like, that's not like a school for me because of the party reputation and all this kind of stuff. And not only that, I grew up near Tucson, and Tucson is the University of Arizona, the Wildcats. And so we were like fed to U of A from my high school. That's the school you go to. If you're going to go to college, you go to U of A. ASU is... they're the devils, right? It's like they're horrible.
Very appropriate. Yeah.
So anyway, I wasn't feeling up ASU, I mean at BYU, and this thought popped into my head after praying about it a little bit. ASU, and I'm like, that can't be right. Like, that's the bad school, and you know, I don't know anything about it. But having had experiences before where stuff like that happened, I'm like, I'm whatever. If this is where I'm supposed to go, I'm supposed to go. So I went up there the next day from Tucson. I was living in Tucson at the time, and enrolled in at ASU. Didn't look back, and it turned out to be a fantastic, fantastic education experience. I met my wife there.
Well,
things like that.
Yeah. So the fact that you met your wife there, that could have been the single most important factor in receiving that inspiration to go there. Because what is the most important decision that we ever make?
Exactly.
Right.
Who we marry. Right.
Yeah. But okay, no. Let me.
We cut you off. I want you to finish.
Tell you that story not to tell you all the good stuff that happened, but rather I hear this a lot. Like going to Sean's point, the devil's advocate point. If we were us three, you know, we've got very similar ideals. If we were to say, well, I don't like that group or I don't like that school because they do this, that, or the other, I'm going to pull my kid from that school, and we react like that, I think we do a disservice to the others in that school.
Yeah.
Not allowing them, if you want to say it one way, you know, like, well, if all the good people leave, then it's just left with that rot or that bad. So I think we need to be courageous enough to live our values. And even in the face of, you know, what might be hard things, stick it out because it's for the benefit of everybody.
It goes back to at the end of Christ's ministry, he goes to the Garden of Gethsemane and he prays, and it's called the intercessory prayer. And he prays that his disciples will be of the world, in the world, but not of the world, and that they will be one as he and the Father are one. And then he goes out and he gives them the command to go and preach the gospel to the Gentiles, to Europe and the rest of the world, not to go off into some monastery and just focus on being righteous themselves, but to actually insert themselves into society, and especially societies that are going most off the track, and help them understand that there is a way to have redemption and to have joy and to have life and or light in their life. And in doing so, you're going to be exposed to some pretty terrible things. And in fact, ultimately, all of them got killed.
Yep.
But that was the command, is to participate in society, not withdraw from it and say, that's too bad. Now I'm going to just close my eyes. I'm going to go the other direction and become a hermit.
Coming up, more thought-provoking conversations on life, death, and the law right after this. You're listening to Life, Death, and the Law, presented by Deason, Garner, and Hanson, the law firm that has been voted Yuma's best 6 years in a row.
Yeah. Highly recommended a book called A Song for Nagasaki.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah. So I'm not going to spoil it, but it's a nice book. It's about a Japanese person. You know, he was raised Shinto. It's a, you know what Shinto is?
No, I don't really.
Well, it's Eastern religion, Shinto. And then as Japan wanted to embrace the West, pretty much they tried to educate the kids that there was zero religion ever and anything. It was just a human body. It's just what I'm seeing, atoms and that's it. There's no soul, no spirit. This is only, and this guy was a scientist, right? And just, so Shinto was out of that. And then he became atheist for a certain time. Anyway, and then he finds a book. I'm not going to spoil it.
Go ahead and spoil it. I mean, I doubt.
No. Well, he finds a book from a scientist that had a religion, and he's, you know, the scientist is just working on that. And he insert himself with the religious family just to see, you know, I want to see what it is. I don't want somebody to preach on me. I just want to leave
observe,
it
yeah.
to your point, like you insert yourself somewhere else. Well, it was the opposite, right? Anyway, he goes to a different path and everything is great. And he's a radiologist, and this was in the 40s. So they were not aware of all the dangers. They were aware of the dangers, but he was doing it for the nation. And, you know, anyway, and then the bomb landed a quarter of a mile from his hospital.
Oh.
And you may imagine what happened. You know, everything was lost and all that. And he kept his faith strong and even stronger, you know, as he goes through all this time of loss and all that. So, very good book, highly recommended.
So it's a true story.
Oh yeah, yeah. His point of view. Takashi Nagai is the name of the doctor. So pretty cool story.
A Song for Nagasaki.
Yeah. Yes, pretty cool story. Anyway, and it's funny because I'm reading that book at the same time that I was reading your book, and I could even link comments from Dizzo's with the other book. You know, like, oh yeah, that's the same thing that he said, but now he's saying in another path of the life of this Takashi Nagai. So anyway, highly recommend.
Going back to what Sean just mentioned, and it played into that. I mean, I had a conversation with Martin yesterday, and we talked about religion. He was asking me questions about my religion, and he wants to come out to our church on Sunday and just visit and stuff. I invited him to do that, and he's going to come. But in that conversation, it was so easy to talk about Jesus Christ because of the experiences that I've had. And I think going to what Sean was saying, when you think about these early apostles that Jesus Christ called to be disciples, even after he was crucified, and they've watched that, they see him, you know, wrongly accused, wrongly convicted, and then basically murdered, right, on the cross.
Gruesome.
Yeah, mm-hmm. gruesomely. And they see all this, and they lose hope, but then leading up to Easter, it's a good time for this, then he appears to them again, now resurrected. And they were flabbergasted. You know, I mean, that's the sense that I get as you read the New Testament. It's like, but he told you this was going to happen. Mm. And yet, you know, when it happens, they're like, well, how can this happen? I was telling you the whole time this is going to happen. But it's a neat conversion to see that once they see the resurrected Jesus Christ, the spirit of conviction that they have, such that they all were willing to die for it. Like to say, listen, this guy lived. We were with him. He died, but he's living again. Like we promise, he's alive again. And I think that is the gospel, the good news that the world needs to understand, is that we all can be together again, that there, this isn't it, there's more. And
yeah, you
once you understand
that
you have you feel this internal obligation to share the good news with everybody.
Well, let's just remember that faith is well, we are flawed, right? And faith is something that you acquired, and you need to work towards that. Is
just like getting in shape for a marathon. You got to work toward
you
it.
You need to work, and you need to ask for it, and you need to ask for that. It's not just like suddenly, and you just now I believe. But it's not just I believe. It's just the faith that not just the in the superficial level of faith. I'm talking about the faith that you're describing.
Yeah.
Right. It takes you asking for it, you looking for it, you working towards that, and then. Guess what? You never fully have 100%, you know, faith. If we have like a little bottle that you feel, like you constantly need to work towards that. Every time you watch that news, every time you see something happening on the street, whatever, you know, it just moves, and you need to keep working out, because if you don't work out, you will lose that faith, right? If you fast every Sunday and if you go to church or whatever you do every Sunday or Saturday, whatever you do, is just your workout. If you read the scriptures, is your workout, because faith is something that you need to acquire and keep, you know? So
yeah. It's an interesting point, because most people are familiar with the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not kill. Thou shalt not bear false witness. Thou shalt not steal or covet thy neighbor's wife or covet thy neighbor's property or worship idols, those types of things. And so if we go on and we say, okay, well, I'm not doing any of those things, but there are other commandments that Christ gave when he ministered on the earth that I don't think are as well known as the laws of Moses and the Ten Commandments, and that is the commandment to be of good cheer. You're commanded to be of good cheer. You're commanded to have hope, faith, and charity. And hope, I the way I interpret hope is I want to be better tomorrow. That's my hope. I'm hoping that tomorrow I can be a better person. Faith is I have faith in Christ that he is going to give me the grace to be better. And through his grace, I can ultimately become like him. And I can recognize him as somebody who I've followed and I've striven to be like throughout my life. And charity is how I treat others in my path to be like him, because he was the ultimate example of charity. And so charity is the pure love of Christ, and it's looking at others and seeking out opportunities to do good, especially when it's inconvenient.
Exactly. Nobody's watching, right?
Yes. Especially when you're not going to get anything in return, it's inconvenient. You're going to get your suit. You're wearing your best clothes, and then somebody's broken down alongside the road, and you're going to get your suit sweaty and dirty. That's when it's important. That's why he talked about the Samaritan. Mm-hmm. And the person who was traveling and stopped what they were doing for the person who was robbed and beaten, dying on the path. And he administered to him. And not only did he administer him there, but he brought him to an inn, gave the innkeeper money to have the person cared for, and said, I'll be back. If he needs anything else, I'll make up the difference. And Samaritan has become synonymous with good doer. Ironically, Samaritan at the time that the parable was told by Christ was somebody that was despised of the Jews. It was like a half-breed. It was somebody who had been taken to Babylon during the Babylonian overthrow of Jerusalem. And when they were given the opportunity to come back to Jerusalem, they actually stayed. And so it was a race of people that intermingled with the Babylonians, and yet were still Jewish or they had the Jewish faith, but they were intermingled as far as their race. And so Jews, pure-blooded Jews, would look at them as worse than Gentiles, and they were Samaritans. And Christ used specifically that type of individual to say, hey, that's the type of individual that is my true disciple. Exactly. They may not come from the right stock or the right breed that you think are righteous individuals. That's the person that's truly following me.
Correct. Yeah. And hope is also agency that we can do and find pathways to be better, right? You can be. It's not like it's just for some chosen few. We all, just to your point. Mm-hmm. So that's part of the definition that I like to have a hope is, you know, agency to do it and capacity to find pathways to do it.
I had this thought the other day. I didn't want to interrupt you, but I was talking to my wife about like the current state of politics. I know you hate it, Gonzalo, mm-hmm. but we're going to
get it. I hate it. It's just, okay.
It's such a downer.
Okay.
It's okay, you can hate it.
I don't hate it. I don't hate it. No, I still hate it. No.
I got you going. No. Clickbait. Mm. No, but so.
I'm clicking, yeah, right?
right about now. Now, like Sean said, the election's kind of gone, and now the Trump administration is moving forward. They're doing a lot of things very quickly, and the media tends to be like really quick to jump on anything that the Trump administration is doing and be negative about it. But the challenge that they're having, the Democrat Party that I see right now, is that they spend so much time devaluing themselves or debasing themselves that they don't have any foundation now. And so now, where the country said, no, actually, we believe that there are two genders, that there's a man and a woman, that, you know, these inherent values that we've always believed in are still inherent values. And the majority of people in the United States voted that was the case, right? Now they're kind of stuck in a position, the Democrat Party, where it's like, you took all these values, like the basic values that most of us can agree on, and you have strip them from your party. And so now that the populace says, actually, no, we you might have done that, but we didn't.
Right. The party
now
leaders
have nothing
did
to stand on. And so it's teetering. It's having a very difficult, the Democrat Party is having a difficult time, in my opinion, finding a voice for itself, because it's already devalued itself and debased itself to the extent that it's like nobody has, you don't have no credibility. You didn't stand for anything before, and now you are. Like, if you were to go back and say now, well, actually, okay, yeah, you were right, we went too far, there's male and female, there's nothing in between, there's no, you know, a male can't become a female, like you can't go back and say that,
or male participation,
now you're discredited anyway. So they put themselves in such a position, in my view, that it's like you're completely, nobody trusts you anymore because you discredited yourself.
Yeah. And we call it impeaching.
On the stand.
When somebody contradicts what they've said before, we impeach them and their testimony as a witness and say, well, now you have zero credibility. Whatever you say, regardless of how good it sounds and how maybe even truthful it is, we can't believe it because it contradicts what you said before.
Yeah. And if you did it once, you're going to do it again. You know, that's the common theme. So that idea of impeachment is what they've, in my opinion, have done, not to get too political, right? But I think what we're talking about is, in this conversation, I see kind of a common belief of values that I think is healthy. And I think my question became, well, as you gentlemen were talking, was, well, how does a person get to that point where they do believe something to the extent that they are willing to fight for it. You think of the founders of the United States, these people that fought tooth and nail against a monarchy to the death.
Right? And against all odds.
And against all odds, yeah. They should not have won. Why does a person do that? You know, I often think, would I have done that?
Yeah. And I'd like to think that I would, but I don't know. You never know until you're put in that position. And quite honestly, the people living in the American colonies, even as subjects to the King of England, they were living a better quality of life than anybody else in the world, than those living in Europe. They had less taxes, they had more freedom, but they still wanted to take it further. And they often talk about, we are going to lay down fundamental God-given rights and establish our own constitution and our own form of government for unborn millions to come. And so it was that foresight and that selflessness of, there are going to be many others that are going to inhabit this land, and we want to sit down and be the foundation, if not to enjoy it ourselves, but to provide that quality of life for those who are coming after us. Well, Gonzalo, thank you for coming on.
It's always awesome. Yes.
Awesome having you down, and we look forward to hearing you next month, and we'll be in contact.
Thank you. Thank you, everybody. I'm here for you, here to help, and just...
How do they contact you?
Well, my phone is 602-333-1995. Again, 602-333-1995.
Simpler way to remember is Trilogy.
Trilogy Financial Services. Well, there's a Trilogy Real Estate company right in front of my office. So there's a lot of people like, well, where are you? Like in the other street. But anyway, Trilogy Financial Services.
And plug in the name Gonzalo.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best way to.
And they can always call us. You know, hey, who's that guy you had on?
Yeah,
just call Decent Garner and Hanson, and we'll point you to Gonzalo.
We'll put a link to your website in the podcast.
Yes,
somebody will do that.
Somebody will do that. Yes. Well, thank you.
If you have questions or want to know more about something that was discussed today, please call the law firm of Decent Garner and Hanson at 928-783-4575 or visit YumaEstatePlanning.com.